two AI agents run through the same 96 science tasks. They tie. Exactly 50% success, both of them. One agent ends with 14 notes in its memory. The other ends with 265. And 49 of those 265 notes are just paraphrases of the task instruction. Four of them are byte-identical copies of the same sentence. The agent's inventory contains an orange. Several others are the same room description, with the furniture listed in a different order.
Same outcome, roughly 25 times more memory to get there. And that gap between an agent that hoards and an agent that distills is the whole story of the paper we're digging into today, which went up on archive yesterday, May 20th, 2026, and we're recording on May 21st. It's called AutoDreamer, Learning Offline Memory Consolidation for Language Agents. Quick ground rules before we go further. This episode is AI generated. The script is from Anthropic's Claude Opus 4.7, and you're hearing two AI voices from 11 Labs. I'm Cassidy, that's Eric, and the show isn't affiliated with either company. With that out of the way, the reason that 25 times gap exists is that the field has been quietly solving the wrong problem.
Wrong problem how? Because at first glance, agent memory sounds like a database question. You write things down, you retrieve them later, you tune your retrieval. What's the wrong framing?
The wrong framing is treating memory as one job. Think about what's actually happening when a language agent operates over time. You deploy an LLM in a loop. It does a task, observes results, writes down some notes, comes back next session and tries to use those notes. The LLM itself doesn't remember anything across sessions. The memory is a separate text bank bolted on the side. Standard stuff. But there are really two cognitive jobs hiding inside that bank. One is fast and local. Just dump through a task. What did I learn? Write it down. The other is slow and global. Across the last 50 sessions, what patterns actually keep working? What entries contradict each other? What's redundant? Those are different operations. They run on different timescales. They want different inputs. And almost every existing system mashes them into a single online process where every memory update happens with only the current session's evidence in hand.
Which means patterns that span sessions never get abstracted because the agent never has more than one session in view at a time.
Exactly. And the practical consequence is what you described at the top. Either the bank grows monotonically and fills up with paraphrases of the task description, or the designers slap on aggressive hand-coded pruning that throws away things that turn out to matter. There's no middle path that's actually learned.
So AutoDreamer's first move is to literally split that into two systems.
Right. And the analogy the authors lean on is from cognitive neuroscience, complementary learning systems theory, which they're careful to flag as a design metaphor, not a biological claim about LLMs. The brain has a fast hippocampus that records specific episodes. You ate eggs for breakfast this morning. And a slow neocortex that across thousands of episodes distills the structure. You usually eat breakfast around 8. Eggs are a common choice. The transfer between those systems is consolidation. A lot of it happens during sleep. So AutoDreamer has a fast writer, dumb, fast, no comparison to existing memory, just appends notes after every session. And then a slow consolidator that wakes up every 5 to 10 sessions, looks at a chunk of the accumulated bank, and rewrites it. That's the architecture in one sentence.
And I want to flag one thing for listeners who've heard the name before. This AutoDreamer is unrelated to the Dreamer World Model line, the Hafner papers, Dreamer V3. The authors footnote this themselves, different dreaming. Here, it's about rewriting text memory notes between sessions, not learning a latent dynamics model.
Good catch. The name carries a lot of evocative weight, and it would be easy to import the wrong associations.
Okay, so the architecture is two timescale, fast writer plus slow consolidator. But the part that actually does interesting work has to be the consolidator. What does it actually do when it wakes up? because rewrite chunks of memory can mean a lot of things.
This is the design choice that I think is the cleverest single move in the paper, and it took me a couple of readings to see why it matters. The intuitive way to build this is what you'd call CRUD-style memory management. The consolidator looks at each entry one by one and decides keep, edit, delete. That's how almost every existing memory manager works. The authors do something different. They call it region rewriting. The consolidator picks a working region, a chunk of the bank, and treats those entries as read-only evidence. It can read them. It can also follow provenance links back to the original raw trajectories the entries came from, and then it synthesizes a fresh replacement set. When it's done, the new set replaces the entire old region, wholesale. The old entries don't survive by default. They only persist if information from them gets resynthesized into the replacement.
So forgetting is the default, not retention.
That's the whole thing. And here's why it matters. In a CRUD system, the model has to actively argue for every deletion. Yes, this duplicate entry is really a duplicate. Please delete it. Every retention is free. Every deletion has a cost. So the bank bloats. That's just thermodynamics of the design. In a region rewriting system, the model has to actively argue for every retention by writing the information back into the replacement. Every retention now has a cost. Every deletion is free. Compactness falls out as a default behavior of the operator itself. Deduplication, contradiction resolution, omission-based forgetting, none of those need to be explicit rules the model is taught. They're structural properties of the rewrite primitive.
The analogy that landed for me here is the difference between editing a draft with track changes versus setting the old draft aside and writing a fresh version. Track changes keeps every sentence by default, unless you delete it. Documents grow. Fresh draft, working from the old one as reference, only what you choose to re-include survives. The default direction is flipped.
That's a better version of how I tried to explain it to myself the first time. And what's nice about that framing is that it also captures the access to source piece. The fresh draft writer still has the old draft on the desk. They can check it. They can pull quotes from it. They just aren't bound by it.
Okay, so that's the operator. But the operator on its own is just a structural choice. It gives you compactness for free. But compactness alone isn't useful if you compress the wrong things. The learning has to figure out which compact abstractions are actually load-bearing, which is where the reward design comes in.
And the reward design is the other piece I want to spend real time on, because it's the most genuinely novel methodological contribution in the paper. The basic problem. You have a consolidator that produces a replacement set. You want to train it to produce good replacement sets. What's the reward? The obvious answer is deploy the agent with the new memory, see if it succeeds. And they do use task success as part of the reward. But task success on its own is a noisy, blunt signal. The model could generate a replacement set with one really good entry and 10 useless ones. And the success rate looks fine because the one good entry is doing the work. The model gets no signal that the 10 others are dead weight.
Right, and there's no supervised label of good memory versus bad memory floating around the data set. You can't just train a classifier on what a good entry looks like.
Exactly. So the authors do something I find quite elegant. They add a counterfactual term. The framing in the brief I really like is the thief test. After the consolidator produces a replacement set, randomly mask out a subset of those entries, pretend a thief took some of them, and see how the agent does. If the mask entries were load-bearing, performance drops. If they were duplicates, performance barely changes because some other entry still carries the information. And occasionally, this is the part I think is genuinely beautiful, if the masked entries were actively harmful, performance actually goes up when they're removed.
Which means the thief is doing you a favor.
The thief is doing you a favor, and that gets baked directly into the reward. Entries whose removal hurts performance, those get positive credit. Duplicates, no credit. Harmful entries, negative credit, so the policy learns to not synthesize them in the first place.
And this is averaged over many random masking subsets, not one entry at a time.
Right. It's a Monte Carlo estimate of each entry's marginal contribution to success, computed by random subset masking, all bundled into the GRPO update. GRPO is the optimizer here. It's the same group relative policy optimization that got a lot of attention through DeepSeek R1 coverage. Sample a group of rollouts, score them all, push the model toward the ones that beat the group average, standard machinery. The novel piece is what's being scored.
Which is what I keep coming back to. The mechanism is conceptually simple. Write fast, consolidate slow, rewrite regions wholesale, reward entries by what happens when they go missing. But the empirical payoff is large. So let me push us into the results, because that's where I had to start convincing myself this wasn't too good to be true.
Please.
The headline numbers are striking. On Science World, which is the simulated science experiment benchmark they train on, AutoDreamer hits about 41% success versus the strongest baseline at about 34%. 7 points is a real margin in that benchmark. The memory footprint to get there is around 7,000 tokens versus 80,000 or more for the strongest baseline. That's roughly 12 times less memory at higher success. The number that actually made me sit up was on Web Arena, the web navigation benchmark. AutoDreamer edges out the next best methods by just a few tenths of a point on success rate, 52.3% versus around 52 flat. But it does it using 927 tokens of memory. The closest competitor on the leaderboard, LightMem, uses 370,000. That's roughly 400 times less memory while still coming out on top.
That ratio is so large, it's almost suspicious. Like, what's the catch?
I had the same reaction, and the catch is actually surfaced honestly in the ablation. Some chunk of that compactness isn't learned. It's just mechanical. The untrained region rewriting operator, same pipeline but no GRPO training, already gets you 6 to 11 times compression over the writer-only baseline. The structural choice of wholesale replacement is doing a lot of work on its own.
So the learned policy isn't pulling all of the weight.
It's pulling significant weight on top of the operator. The trained version still beats the untrained version meaningfully on success rate. But a chunk of the compression headline is really attributable to the design choice you described, not the RL. The authors report this clearly in the ablation table. They're not hiding it. But it does refine the story. It's the operator plus the learned policy together. Neither alone explains the numbers.
That's fair, and I think it's the right read. The way I'd put it is, the operator makes compactness cheap, and the learning makes it intelligent. You need both.
Right, and the place where the learning really shows up is in what's actually inside the banks. The two appendix case studies, frankly, are the best parts of the paper, and they're buried.
Take us through them.
The first one is the LightMem head-to-head. That's the comparison I opened with. 96 Science World tasks, 50% success rate for both methods, identical. LightMem finishes with 265 active entries, 17,500 tokens. AutoDreamer finishes with 14 entries, 716 tokens, about 25 times smaller for identical task success. And what's actually in those banks tells you why. The LightMem bank has 49 entries that are paraphrases of the task instruction itself. 4 byte identical copies of the agent's inventory contains an orange. Multiple entries that are just reorderings of the same room description. Sink, blast furnace, table, door, in different sequences. What does AutoDreamer have? Entries like, and I'm reading verbatim, general procedure for lifespan comparison tasks, teleport to outside, focus on animal, prefer adult over juvenile or egg. That's a template with slots. It applies to a whole family of tasks. And it also has negative lessons, entries that say common incorrect targets in lifespan comparison tasks, focusing on juveniles or eggs instead of adult animals can lead to failure.
Negative knowledge. That's huge.
That's huge.
And it's the second case study, the head-to-head against AWM on the find entity tasks. AWM is a procedural skill library that only learns from successful trajectories. AutoDreamer learns from failures too. Same memory footprint roughly, about 10 entries and 800 tokens for both methods. But AutoDreamer hits 72% success versus AWM's 26. And successful episodes for AutoDreamer average around 7 steps, where AWM averages around 20. The mechanism, when you look at what's in the bank, AutoDreamer has synthesized a rule that says, essentially, don't focus on the banana first. It lists specific salient but wrong objects from past failures. Beehive, orange, apple. AWM never sees those failure trajectories, so it never learns to avoid them. It only sees the wins, and it can't extract a don't from a do.
There's a slot abstraction example in the find entity case study that I keep coming back to also. The raw writer memory has 3 entries. Move to blue box in living room. Move to green box in bathroom. Move to red box in kitchen, or whatever the specifics were. 3 concrete past tasks, none of which match the current task. The agent flails. The AutoDreamer consolidated version replaces those 3 entries with 1 entry that says, move to designated container, yellow, red, purple, or orange box. A template with a slot. That single abstract entry helps the agent solve the new task in 6 steps, where the 3 concrete entries didn't help at all.
And there's a contradiction filtering example that's almost funny. A lifespan compare task. The raw memory has 1 entry saying, longest is crocodile, and another saying, longest is sea turtle. Direct contradiction. Plus, a writer error that says, focus on adult and baby elephant. And the agent dutifully types, focus on adult, adult elephant. Gets back, no such entity. Tries again. Gets the same error. Retries 16 times before hitting the step cap. The consolidated version sidesteps all of that. It replaces the specific claims and the malformed instruction with an abstract procedure. Compare lifespans of the listed candidates and focus the adult life stage. The agent solves it in 3 steps.
That's the cleanest demonstration of what consolidation actually does that I've seen in any of this literature. It's not just compression. It's resolving contradictions, dropping malformed entries, and lifting concrete instances into reusable templates, all from a reward signal that just measures task success and counterfactual utility.
Okay, so Cassidy, here's where I want to push. The mechanism is elegant. The case studies are vivid. But the result that genuinely surprised me, the one I had to read twice, is the cross-domain transfer.
Right. So the setup. They train the consolidator only on Science World trajectories. Science World is a simulated science experiment environment. Virtual labs run experiments, take measurements. Pretty specific domain. Then they take that trained consolidator, zero shot, and apply it to ALF World, which is household task simulation. Fetch the apple from the kitchen, put it on the counter. Completely different domain. And it improves performance there too. Then they go further. They apply it to web arena, web navigation, actual websites. And not only does the consolidator transfer, but the writer backbone changes. Science World uses Qwen 314b as the writer. Web arena uses Gemini 3.1 flashlight. Different model, different domain, different task structure, and the same consolidator policy still works.
That suggests how to consolidate textual memories is a transferable skill that's roughly independent of the underlying task.
That's how the authors frame it. And I think the framing is mostly right. The analogy I keep reaching for is editing. A good editor trained on scientific manuscripts can usually edit a cookbook reasonably well. Because editing, knowing what to cut, what to abstract, how to resolve contradictions, is a skill that's mostly separable from the subject matter. What doesn't transfer is the field-specific knowledge of what facts are correct. The chemistry expertise stays with the chemistry writer, but the editorial judgment travels.
I want to steelman an objection here, though, because the authors do also acknowledge it. The consolidator transfers across domains, but the writers don't. Each domain has its own hand-engineered writer prompt with domain-specific schemas. The Web Arena Writer is a completely different model. So the domain-agnostic claim is real, but it rests on writers doing the per-domain adaptation work. A harder transfer test would be one writer plus one consolidator across all three domains. That experiment isn't in the paper.
That's a fair caveat. I'd add another. The writer's schema dependence is a real architectural constraint. If the writer at intake time doesn't capture some piece of information, the consolidator can't generally recover it. The provenance links help. The consolidator can fetch the original raw trajectory. But in practice, it's heavily relying on what the writer chose to preserve. So the system is only as good as the writer's information capture.
And there's one more piece of the steelman I want to put on the table, because I think it's the most interesting failure in the paper. They have a task family in AlphaWorld called Look at Objet in Light. AutoDreamer underperforms there. The trained consolidator actually does worse than the untrained version. When you dig into why, and the authors do dig, the failure is systematic, not random. The tasks require knowing very specific spatial details. The alarm clock is on desk 2. The desk lamp is on desk 1. Episodic, specific, locally important. The trained consolidator looks at those details and goes, ah, these are specific instances. The abstract pattern is what matters, and replaces them with generic procedural guidance. The agent then loops at the wrong desk because the load-bearing information was the specifics.
The librarian who's learned that books are best organized by topic and then throws out the call numbers.
Exactly that. For most queries, find me a book about cooking, topic organization is fine. But for the query, where is the physical book right now? The call number is the load-bearing information, and abstracting it away breaks the task. The consolidator has learned a useful prior toward generalizable abstraction. And that prior systematically misprices the specific situations where the episodic detail was the point.
What I find honest about how the authors handle this, they don't bury it. They name it explicitly. If you remove that one task family, the trained versus untrained margin on AlphaWorld widens from about 1 point to almost 5. So the overcompression bias is real, it's interpretable, and it's affecting the headline number. The framing question it raises, which the paper doesn't fully wrestle with, is whether load-bearing versus redundant is the right axis at all. Because there's also load-bearing for this one task family that doesn't generalize. And the counterfactual reward, the way it's set up, doesn't cleanly distinguish that from load-bearing in a generalizable way.
Right. The reward is computed across the evaluation set. If the evaluation set has many task families and one of them has unusual specifics, those specifics will get over-penalized on average because they don't help anywhere else.
It's a subtle bias, but it's a real one. And I think it's the most interesting open question the paper leaves.
A couple of other things I'd flag in the steelman more briefly. The main results table doesn't have variance estimates. The authors acknowledge this in their own limitations. Some of the margins on ALF World are small enough that single seed point estimates aren't enough to be confident in the ranking. They add bootstrap confidence intervals in the appendix, but those bootstrap over task resampling, not over training seeds. So the variance picture is incomplete. And there's a training deployment mismatch that the paper flags but doesn't formally characterize. During training, the consolidator's output is evaluated in a tiny local bank containing just its own synthesized entries. During deployment, the bank is huge, persistent, and full of entries the consolidator didn't produce. And those entries compete for retrieval. The continual deployment experiments are evidence that the local bank surrogate transfers in practice, but there's no theoretical guarantee, and the margins on continual deployment are noticeably larger than on the controlled fixed bank setting, which suggests the bank dynamics are doing significant work the local objective doesn't capture.
That last one, I think, is the most important methodological caveat. It's not a fatal flaw. The empirical evidence is real. But it does mean the training objective is a proxy for the thing the deployment actually cares about. And we don't know exactly how tight the proxy is.
Okay, so pulling back. Cassidy, what's your read on what's actually new here when the dust settles?
I think there are three things, and they're in different categories. The first is a methodological move. Training a memory management policy with RL where the reward is task success plus counterfactual utility. That's a recipe that I think generalizes well beyond this specific architecture. Anywhere you have a learned component whose outputs combine into a downstream task, the "what happens if I knock out this piece" reward design is going to be applicable. It's a reusable idea. The second is a structural insight. Separating writing from consolidation and making the consolidator operate on regions with wholesale replacement semantics, that's a design pattern. It's not specific to language agents. It's about how to make compactness a default rather than an explicit objective. I think other systems will adopt this pattern. The third is more conceptual. The cross-domain transfer suggests that how to consolidate textual memories is a learnable, separable skill. If that's true at scale, and one paper isn't enough to be sure, it's a building block for agents that accumulate experience across heterogeneous deployments. That's a different vision of what agent learning looks like than the dominant one right now, which assumes everything has to be retrained per domain.
And the deployment economics piece. A lot of practical agent systems are quietly bottlenecked on memory quality, not on the LLM's reasoning. Every token in the bank that gets retrieved is a token in the prompt. Bigger banks mean slower inference and higher costs on every call. The fact that you can get higher success with an order of magnitude less memory isn't a benchmark curiosity. It's the kind of result that changes whether deploying memory-augmented agents at scale is actually viable.
That's the part that I think will land hardest with practitioners. Not the architecture, not even the counterfactual reward, just you can get more performance with less memory if you stop treating memory as a database and start treating it as something you train.
One last thing I'd put on the table for honest framing. The paper benchmarks against 10 baselines, but a couple of the strongest RL-trained competitors, MemAlpha and UMEM, couldn't be evaluated on WebArena because their released checkpoints use small backbones that can't handle WebArena's accessibility trees. The paper is upfront about this, doesn't claim WebArena dominance over those specific baselines, but it does leave the WebArena comparison less rigorous than the other two domains.
Right. So the WebArena number is impressive against the methods they could compare against. But the cleanest comparisons are on ScienceWorld and AlfWorld,
where the margins are smaller, but the comparisons are complete.
And those margins are still meaningful, especially when you account for the memory cost axis.
So if I'm walking away from this paper, what I'm taking is the field had been training writers and ignoring consolidators. The interesting cognitive work happens between sessions, not during them. The way to extract it is to give a model a wholesale rewrite operator and a reward that asks what each note would cost you if it went missing. And the resulting capability, knowing how to consolidate textual memory, seems to be more general than the domain it was trained on.
That's a clean summary. The thing I'll add is the humility piece. The authors explicitly say they're using CLS as an operational design principle, not a biological claim. The look at Objin light failure is named openly. The training deployment surrogate is flagged. This is a paper that wears its limitations on its sleeve. And that's part of why it reads as serious rather than promotional.
And the case studies are the kind of qualitative evidence that I wish more empirical agent papers included. Showing what's actually in the bank, 49 paraphrases of the task instruction next to 14 abstract procedural templates tells you something the aggregate benchmark numbers can't.
The paper and a few related reads are linked in the show notes if you want to pull on this thread yourself. And if you want the full transcript with the jargon defined in line, plus the concept pages that tie this episode to other ones we've done on agent learning and memory systems, that all lives on paperdive.ai.
Thanks for listening to AI Papers, a deep dive.